The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the good.
Don't call me Paino.
The bad.
Absolute.
And the rugby.
Folded like a deck chair.
With Paino, Lord, and the Husk. I don't know what that means.
Welcome, Dream Team, to another episode of The Good, The Bad and The Rugby in partnership with City Index, the leading provider of spread betting, CFD and FX trading. And after last week's finale debacle, would you like to give us a little intro music this time around?
Right, no?
Sure the last post is necessary. Better. Is that Jive Bunny?
Yeah. Do you remember you used to have a sunflower in the corner of the room? You used to, like, before social media, that was the highlight of day. You used to press that thing on the big mouth bass. Yeah, very amazing. Exciting. Welcome to Good Bear Rugby. And yes, we do trumpet sounds now.
I used to quite like a double bass.
Did you?
You put your jazz over the top of that.
I'll tell you what's funny, right? If it's not funny, I shouldn't really start sorry saying it's funny because it'd probably be crap. But at school, when you in your first 2 years, you had to sample lots of lessons and we had to do music, right? And I got given the double bass.
Oh, wow.
A big kid was like, right, double bass. And the whole idea was that by throughout the school year, you would learn this instrument and then do a concert on speech day.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty certain that I just didn't learn any of it. So I got to speech day, me and my other mate, a bit of a div like me, were in there and we were playing this double bass. My parents obviously paid a fortune to get me there. My dad's looking at me. You can see him thinking, he's not playing that. And yeah. As soon as the concert finished, I just spun the double bass, went, that's jazz. And the guy was like, get out, you're in detention. Yeah. Oh, I don't know how I did that. But double bass, I now wish I'd actually spent, you know, you waste your time.
Yeah.
I think I could have been quite a cool scat jazz player.
My darling daughter, who's 11, has started to learn the saxophone.
Right.
Terms worth of sax lessons. £40 a lesson, 10 lessons, do the math, plus hiring a saxophone, £35 a month. Said to her at the end of half term yesterday, I said, I haven't really heard much sax. How's that going? So she went upstairs. Two notes. I was like, don't worry too much about it. Go back to the gaming or whatever it is that you were doing. But it was absolutely
dreadful.
Remarkable.
Really?
Yeah.
Because also the thing is that, you know, it takes so long to
encourage your children.
You have
but
to.
Only to a certain
point. But when they're so crap as well, like twinkle, twinkle.
Yeah,
you just can't get it right.
I could just hear a roar of laughter. And it was like, you asked for it. I was trying to describe last week's show to my wife when I got back and she said, how was it? And I said, it was really good. We sort of did 10 minutes talking about grassroots and then we had about an hour and a half with one of the greats of the game and then we finished up doing trumpet noises and she was like, standard fare.
Yeah.
Where do you go this week? And the answer to the question, where do we go this week, is that we're upping the tonnage in a few moments' time. We've got two of the heavy duties who are going to join us. I'm very, very much looking forward to, I suppose we're entering the world of the front rowers, aren't we, really? Mm. So we will come on to that in a moment or two. But just very quickly, a reflection on a curate's egg of a weekend for the Kiwis. ABs took Wales apart the Principality. They obviously look like a team that have had a lot of time together during the Rugby Championship. Wales obviously first hit out and shorn of a number of their stars. 100 up for Bodie. Intercept to start, intercept to finish.
He's done that so quickly as well, hasn't he?
I know.
I should just talk about New Zealand, Ardie Sevier.
Mega.
Do you know why I want to talk to him, actually? Because this works quite nicely with the Sonny Bill. So if you've listened to the Sonny Bill episode, you will see that he is actually a natural performer. Everything he wants to do, he kind of wants to put himself out there, but keeps kind of internally stopping himself. Very much a Pacific Islander trait, Māori trait, you know, stay humble. Ardie Sevier, for me, is breaking the mold a little bit because he's got his own podcast. He interviews people. He puts himself out there, him and his brother, Julian are doing, you know, do dances, do all the TikTok stuff and everything else. And they, and it's very different than a lot of the other players. And he's kind of been accepted. And I think he's accepted because he's a badass player. And obviously, he's captain of New Zealand. But I think he's kind of breaking the mold. Because what concerns me about New Zealand is they've got so many goats, greatest of all times, right? But there's only so many spots you can have. What happens to the rest of the guys? You know, because there's so many people in New Zealand who have played, say, got 30, 40 caps, being replaced. There's only so many coaching jobs. If you stay humble the whole time, what the hell do you do? New Zealand's a small place. There's only so many coaching jobs. So I quite like him. And I think the fact that he plays the way he does, yeah, with just like utter hatred, and then has a good time, is the absolute man.
They look mega, the All Blacks. Poor old Alan went 149th test for his country. He's obviously picked up, I think it's 12 for the Lions as well. So he's way out in front now, but looked as if he'd taken a bang to the shoulder. So hopefully he will be back sooner rather than later to keep up the good work. But Wales obviously with a bit to do there. All Blacks looking very good. We have got to talk about the Black Ferns, though, who obviously took on England at a packed Sandy Park on Sunday, live on the Beeb. I know Scaz was down there doing, I think, a bit of BBC too, but what a result for England. And just the sort of the perfect, I mean, you've got to bookmark the fact that the Black Ferns haven't played for a couple of years. England have gone 14 straight wins in that time, but so good for the Red Roses to put together a win like that.
It's amazing. I mean, look, obviously we do the you know, the good, the Scaz and the rugby. So we, you know, we kind of take a much more close look at the women's game. And the Red Roses have been fantastic for such a long time. You know, every time I attend a dinner with one of them, you know, they go, what's the difference between James Haskell and you? They've won a World Cup, you haven't. Yeah. And I think they're doing very, very good things. And to take on the Black Ferns, yes, they haven't played, but to dismantle them in the way they did. And how good is it to see a full stadium? It's nothing more than they deserve. I think women's rugby is growing and growing, and the more events we do, you know, we went down to Westbury RFC, we've talked about it, watched the women's team, they were absolutely loving it. You know, Emily Scarrett, who obviously sadly is injured at the moment, has played such an important role. So I'm could not be more excited to see how they go. I'm looking forward to see if they can get another World Cup, and there's so many young women coming through who are kicking ass, which is great.
Zoe Harrison, sensational at 10 at the weekend. They're meeting again this weekend. I think Emily's going to be down there for that as well. And on that note, if you haven't had a little listen to the good, the Scaz and the rugby, Tins was put to work down on Scaz's farm. It's quite good to see him doing a bit of manual labour, actually. I'm not sure we can get him to do much of that.
No, I wouldn't do that. And normally he just furloughs them on his own farm. Joking.
Raw and sore. Go and have a listen to that if you would like to. Emily, hopefully on the comeback trail sooner rather than later. But great to see the Red Roses going extremely well.
Emily showed me her injury, actually.
Westbury.
Yeah, it was quite terrifying. I mean, she didn't actually show me the wound because it was covered, but she showed me what she actually did.
The picture.
Yeah, how the bone came out one side. Right. I'm not really a big fan of that.
No.
Some people can deal with that. I can't. I'm very squeamish with stuff like that. Yeah. Yeah, I can't. You know, like what people send weird stuff on WhatsApp. She goes, do you want to see it? And I was like, and I looked at it, I was like, oh my God. So fair play that she's come back from that, and hopefully she'll be flying.
We have got Scaz, Elmer, Tins and Mo Hunt doing a live show at The Prince in Fulham this Wednesday evening. Tickets are free. Get yourselves down there if you'd like to go and see that. It's great to have Elmer over. She's moved from South Africa to London. She's got lots going on and is going to still keep marshalling the troops on the good, the Scaz and the rugby, which is brilliant. So if you're in the Fulham area and you fancy a great night with Scaz, Elmer, Tins and Mo, that is this Wednesday evening, and they'll be looking ahead to that Red Roses Black Ferns second test this coming weekend.
I've got an interesting one to see what Tins says, because, you know, obviously he hates Ireland. He's very negative about South Africa. Who is it in the women's game that he's going to be going after? It's an interesting one. Or is he very happy?
France?
Would you might get a bit upset about France? I wonder.
I don't know.
I'm interested to see. It's definitely worth going down to see, to listen to Tins alone.
Yeah. Just mumble and grumble in the corner about something. Yeah. Captain Positive. If you'd like to go to that, head over to our socials to grab a ticket. It is a big week for women's rugby, a year out from the World Cup as well. That tournament in New Zealand next year is going to be a humdinger. Absolutely bet your bottom dollar the Black Ferns will be where they need to be. England looking very good. France always strong. Australia can spring a surprise or three. Much to talk about next Wednesday. Talking of France, though, it is a great, great pleasure to say bienvenue and ça va bien to our good friend for the first time in person, I think. We haven't recorded together in person, have we? How are you, Benjamin Kayser, good to have you with us.
Thank you very much. I'm very, very, very happy to be here, to be honest. I don't think my move to England was absolutely complete without being able to sit down next to some beautiful gentlemen like you, share a good moment. We're lacking the red wine, but I'm sure the heart is there.
I was just thinking, before we actually started rolling with this, if we were to give you an adjective, we've obviously got the good, the bad, what would Ellis be?
Badder. Crazy.
And you'd be the brains. The good, the bad, the badder, the brains and the rugby. Getting quite a mouthful, but it's working for me.
I like it. Isn't it nice though? We haven't had Ben in person, but he's so kind of, he has that relaxing air about him, that sort of confidence that it feels like he's been part of the family for a long time. Do you know, yeah. It's like we haven't seen him in public, but he's
like the son-in-law who comes in and owns the family.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
He's like do you know what it
which
is?
Which not you or I would know about.
No, he's sort of like the sibling that's done really well.
Yes.
You know, the one that comes in and ruins everything. Where are you? I was at, you know, university getting an MBA. Really? Yeah. Why haven't we seen you around? Because I'm too busy working. Yeah. What are you two doing?
Farting about going nowhere. What have you been up to?
Well, listen, I've tried to finish my MBA, but to be totally honest, it's been, well, for everyone, a crazy 2 years. But doing this thing online at some point, it was particularly challenging.
Yeah,
I've met 72 people in Oxford doing this executive MBA. So it's like a week a month. That's been brilliant. Mind-blowingly hard from time to time, but also extremely eye-opening to actually what we learn in sport, to be totally honest. Vets and ex-sportsmen share this common knowledge of what it is to fail, what it is to get back up, what it is to learn from that. And I was surrounded by brilliant, brilliant individuals, but we're scared shitless about failing, some of them. So it was actually really rewarding to see people from, you know, 25 different countries traveling the world for this. And I was complaining because I was traveling from France and then from Tunbridge Wells. There's people come from Perth, you know, West Australia, from Houston, Texas, from Nigeria, from Lagos and all that. So it's been very, very impressive. A couple of key moments. I mean, the first week when we did analytics and problematics, so you saw this one big fat Frenchman at the back. I had, you know, blood coming out of my ears, vapor, steam, hot water coming out of my eyes. It's been problematic, but a lot of help, a lot of guys, you know, lend a hand. I mean, I didn't know what Excel looked like, right? And they saw that I didn't know what it looked like. Then they really came in and helped me out. So it created this bond, this brotherhood. That was sensational. There's also chopping 20 pints of Guinness every night in Oxford. It's been very, very nice. And it's a stunning place, to be honest. I've never been, and it's just got something special. So I grafted doing this thing. I've officially did the end of course ceremony 2 weeks ago to have a couple of assignments, which is my problem, but the rest is done. And I got to go with my wife. She came up, and there was a beautiful ceremony, and we had a few pints after. And it's been cool. It's been really cool. I think I got more friendship than I thought I would in there. A hell of a lot of networking, obviously, but also just opening my mind to all the possibilities that are out there, which is what it's all about, right? Transforming yourself, see how good you can be, and see what comes out.
Honestly, right? Listening to him speak.
Contrasts.
That's what I mean. Yeah. You know when you hear him and you go, Christ, he's so articulate. And then you realize it's his second language, which is even more annoying. And he comes in and he's like verbose and he's talking about all this kind of stuff. And you're like, amazing. And then you think, oh, what did I do with my life? I got a JCB digger license. He's doing an MBA at Oxford talking about things that I didn't even understand half those words. Excel, I thought, was a French way of saying you've done brilliantly. I didn't know it was a... I mean,
not the word you heard a lot in Paris.
No, I didn't. Terrible was a word I heard a lot of. But hey, congratulations. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Please come back and do more shows, because I reckon we could really pitch ourselves much more highbrow with him involved, because you used to be, but we've really worn you away, Alex, to the point where you're now a bit sweary, where he's very high end, yes. Very chic.
Don't let them get you down. It's hard, but don't. Did you do mortarboard and sort of scroll and stuff? Have you done the gowns and the...
I've done the gowns, I've done the rowing, I've done everything there is to be done about it, but there's still going to be an actual... Because you go to the Said Business School, but you're also part of your college. So there's still the graduation is going to be done. The college apparently is all in Latin, and there's a proper formal thing where they make you wear a gown, but then you come out and you come back in as an actual graduate. If I do graduate, touch wood, please come on.
Yeah.
One final push, one final effort. I mean, you laugh, Hask, but your capacity to connect with people is something that a lot of them envy. Your capacity to travel the world.
My capacity to upset people is true. Even more.
Yeah, but I mean, at least that means you're pushing your limits.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of them don't know how to push their limits, to be fair. You know, there's also the corporate ladder of being like, let's make sure I don't fuck up.
Yeah.
And that's a whole strategy. That's a whole game plan. In sport, they only tell you, there's 1,000 guys out there. If you want to stand out, you need to outpush your limit every single day for 15 years.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then you're only part of the...
The background noise, as opposed to, yeah.
Did you do some coaching?
I did some coaching, yeah. I absolutely adored it. It was sensational. I got a shit video from the two of you, you know, wishing me best of luck before varsity.
Did they like that?
They loved it.
Oh, perfect.
But
should have charged you for it.
See, that's your business mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was brilliant. It was very rewarding. Yeah, I mean, sometimes your English lack a bit of heart, a bit of passion, a bit of, you know, natural sort of instinctive way
the
of
Latin
doing things.
Fire, yeah.
But your traditions are beautiful. Yeah. And your traditions sort of anchor the whole society, and I find them sensational. And it's quite heavy. I mean, Oxford rugby is serious stuff. Guys will give a lot to it.
My brother did 4 years of the varsity match. And actually, that was one of my best ever days as a broadcaster, was doing the varsity match in which he played. And it was an extraordinary story. Well, he came off the bench in his penultimate year, and it didn't go very well. And his last year, he had an absolute storm of the year. Anton Oliver played, and they won a thriller. I think they won like 33-29. That was a good day.
But to answer your question,
dreams come true.
To answer your question, Hask, after the first couple of beers that I had with the rugby team the first time, I speak to the actual hooker and I'm like, what'd you do? And I think he, and he works for AstraZeneca.
Wow.
So one of them was like part of the research team that actually created a vaccine. Okay, yeah, fair enough. And then the Lucid prop, you know, who's looking at you, looks like any other Lucid prop you've ever seen, has got a PhD in, or is finishing a PhD in, what was it, like social economics. One of them is a researcher in sociology. A lot of them are teachers. They're very, very clever people.
But gone are the days where you got the bloke in on the air conditioning degree. Like, how's James Haskell here? Oh, he's doing land management.
There are one or two quite famous rugby players who did land management at Oxbridge. Just very quickly, what was the rowing?
The rowing is just part of the experience. They get you to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and go rowing.
Wow.
As a team. What you like as rowers?
It's actually very, very hard.
Yeah, it is. The timing.
Technically very, very hard to do. I just couldn't get the things to flip it the right way, you know, to be absolutely fluid.
And it catches in the water, doesn't it?
It is very, very hard. And there's a lingo about it because there's somebody standing at the...
Rollocks.
Telling you, you know, they don't say it right or left. They give you, there's other numbers.
Oh, God, yeah.
I forget about all that. But no, symbolically to finish also the Oxford rugby in Welford Road, because that's the only time the varsity was played there. So I was chuffed just to go back to Leicester in this beautiful, sensational stadium that it is, with 6,000 people at the time. It wasn't amazing, but because that was the limit and we won, I honestly was absolutely moved and chuffed to put my hands on this varsity.
What was the post-match tear-up like with a set of students? Because I
don't know.
You don't know?
No.
You didn't join in?
I didn't join in. I went home like a good boy.
Let the kids play.
Because apparently they go on for a couple of days.
I'm sure, yeah.
I actually feel more intelligent with Ben in the building.
I do.
Yeah, it's good.
I do.
We should do this more often. Shall we bring in our main guest? It's really interesting actually chatting with you before we welcome our guest on, because when, we said, come and have a chat, we'd love you too. But when we said the guest, you were like, oh, wow. The story is there with you in South Africa, which is done it once, don't necessarily need to do that every week.
Don't ever want to do it.
Right.
Ever. There's a limit of physical pain and I'm ready to endure to play rugby in South Africa. I just cross it way too many.
Okay. This week's guest is a man who's won just about everything that there is to win in Southern Hemisphere rugby. A Tri Nations, a rugby championship, he's beaten the Lions. And that is all before we mention the fact that he was a Rugby World Cup winner a couple of years ago in Japan. He said seeing Sia lift the trophy meant he could retire with a smile on his face because the Springboks were in a better place than when he went in. It's a statement that stands up on its own, but when you factor in the societal challenges that South Africa faces as a country, it has even more significance. Tendai Mtamawira is with us. You may know him better as the Beast, but it's an absolute pleasure to welcome the legend to the good, the bad, and the rugby, the Beast. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Looking forward to engaging with you and telling you a few stories.
We're looking forward to it too. First and foremost, we've got to start with where on earth on planet world you are right now. What have you been doing? Where are you?
So I'm in California at the moment. So I'm in the US. I've been here for about a week. I've still got another week to go. So I basically came here to do some business meetings. There's a consortium here that bought the Sharks. So they brought me out here to engage with them and discuss and the best way for the Sharks going forward, you know, in the URC. And also Roc Nation. I'm a Roc Nation client, so they were hosting me in New York City. I did a few activations with them, and it was quite incredible. So I'm here in LA now to meet with their team, the Roc Nation team here in LA. And I'm going to the Lakers game tomorrow. So yeah, I've got some fun stuff that I'm going to be doing sideline chatting because I'm a huge NBA fan. So yeah, man, it's been incredible. I met Trevor Noah 2 days ago. I was in Philly. I watched his show. So it was incredible to meet, you know, a fellow South African that's doing amazingly well in the States. So yeah, man, I'm having so much fun this side.
I mean, it kind of sounds like, Mish, you're having the best trip in the history of the world, and to justify it, they've gone, "Oh, could you just talk a little bit about the Sharks, please?" Because I actually follow you on social media, and Trevor Noah is one of my like absolute comedy heroes, and I saw you walk into his dressing room, give him a hug, and I was like, this is what happens when you've got a nickname like the Beast and you're good at rugby. I'm very jealous.
Nah, I think, James, I think you definitely have more inroads than me. And I've seen your Instagram, man. You're busy, man. You got some high rollers that you hang with. So, you know, I aspire to be like you, you know, one day.
Man, listen, don't believe anything. Roc Nation would not touch me with a barge pole. Like I was saying that I see Maro Itoji's hanging out with Jay-Z and I'm hanging out with Jay from the Inbetweeners. It's like, it's just, you guys operate on a whole new level. It must be quite exciting for you. Do you like really enjoy these kind of moments?
No, I absolutely enjoy it, you know. And I think, you know, I've always aspired to, you know, to work with people that are like-minded, you know, people that want to do great things, you know. So I always want to network. I always want to meet people like Trevor Noah. So yeah, it's incredible. And Roc Nation has, you know, afforded me that opportunity to come out here in the US, you know, and meet some really prominent, you know, South African people, businessmen, you know, guys that are just doing, you know, so well, you know, billionaires, you know, guys that have kind of just, you know, like, yeah, you know, gone through the ceiling. And you know, that inspires me because I really want to do great in my next chapter in business and my philanthropy. So yeah, man, I really enjoy meeting people like that.
Business and philanthropy, it sounds like that might be next month with all the fun that you're having in the here and the now. Tell me a little bit though about, because you've done a business degree, tell me about what the business is.
Yeah, so I'm busy with quite a few things. So when I start playing rugby, I joined a security company. I've always been involved in security, even when I was playing. A company called Fidelity Security in South Africa is the biggest by far. And I became an investor, became a shareholder in the business probably 12 years back. So, you know, I just enjoyed the industry, to relate it to the kind of person I am. You know, as you know, South Africa has got a lot of crime. So, you know, I wanted to be at the forefront of protecting people and their, you know, and their assets. So I joined the business fully now, and I'm running a subsidiary as CEO. So it's just really incredible. So as you say, Dane, I'm studying an MBA. I'm doing a master's, and it's helping me on the go, you know, to learn about, you know, business principles that I can apply on a daily basis. So it's been really, yeah, it's been special, man, to walk into something as good as that. And then on another, you know, front as well, I want to do, you know, I want to diversify. I want to do other stuff as well. So, you know, meeting other businessmen just kind of opens my mind and introduces me to a whole a new world of possibilities. So, you know, being in the U.S. now, man, I'm so excited because there might be certain things that I didn't think I was going to get into, but they're enticing. So, yeah, man, I'm very keen to do a lot.
Mate, I love that attitude. I love the attitude of saying that he was involved for a security company whilst he was still playing. There's a lot of guys that would have got rid of it. So probably you tell me, Beast, if you agree, but it probably actually got you, you know, to settle your feet on the ground, to enjoy rugby for what it is. It's a pleasure. It's a passion. It's a heart commitment to your mates, to your stadiums, to your area. But at the same time, it's not real life. And I love how he says that he travels the world and, as you know, meet billionaires because you can still learn. That's the humility of a great champion. over 100 caps world champion who transformed, you know, that left the legacy of the Springboks, like you said, left the jersey that you wear for a couple of times. You want to leave it a little bit better than when you picked it up the first time. That could, you know, it's pretty much the pinnacle of any sportsman career. But to have the humility to say, I still want to learn. There's still incredible people around me. Opening his eyes to do it. I mean, for me, it speaks highly of what I want for sportsmen to thrive to. Transform yourself, be the best version of yourself, know that you're huge, but you're also tiny in the world, and that has much bigger things to it. And then just to combine it, then obviously if he does the NBA, that means, you know, the front rowers are going to rule the world.
I was going to say exactly that. Before you came on, Beast, we were chatting with Ben, who's just finished his NBA at Oxford, and the two of you are dispelling a lot of stereotypes about front row play, which used to be drinking aftershave and fighting in the small hours, and now you're CEOs and ruling the world. I mean... No. It's always been that way?
I don't know if I've never made it to Oxford post November 2013, where I play against the Springboks. I thought that wasn't going to come alive out of that game. So you probably don't recognize me, Beast, because I was a lot taller then. I got my head drilled in by you and all your mates, and I lost about 20 centimeters. I was standing, and you had Flip van der Meer behind you, who ended up being my neighbor for a long time in Clermont, a good buddy of mine. And the two of you with that deep voice, I'm telling you, speaking before a scrum, I think you gave me nightmares for a couple of years following that. So thank you for retiring.
And now taking
the world. I'm done too. I never want to play the Springboks again. You guys have got anger.
You know, it was awesome to play against you. And I always relish to, you know, to meet, you know, people like yourselves on the field. And, you know, it's great camaraderie that you, you know, especially the opposition tight end, you know. So, you know, I know it's always a hard time. And I think you actually buckled me a few times. So I know you're being humble. You're just trying to be nice to me. So I think it was a fair contest, you know. But, yeah, man, it's special. You know, the great game of rugby is truly, truly remarkable. And I think on the, you know, on the front rows, you know, I'll kind of try and just, you know, put everything in context. I think, you know, you get all the intelligent guys up front, you know, you get all the doctors, you get the accountants, you know, people that just really want to take over the world, you know, and do great things. So I think, you know, there's a lot of, you know, intelligent front rows that I've come up against or aspire to just, you know, emulate them in a big way.
Doctors, accountants, CEOs, professors. And Joe Marla. he may yet well rule the world.
Joe Marla, of course.
Yeah.
His caravans.
You can say that.
What's interesting about the Beast is, right, you know, what, first of all, what an amazing nickname. You must be just so happy that you got that nickname of all the nicknames that could have been given out.
Oh, no, I'm very grateful. So my best friend in primary school gave me that name. So I don't know if you are familiar with the story, but I'll let you in on it. So when I was born in 1985, I happened to be the heaviest baby ever to be born in Zimbabwe.
Wow.
I weighed well over 5 kgs, man. So I was a beast at birth.
Imagine that, though. Imagine, so.
Well done, your mum.
So you're called the Beast, right? And a security firm's interested in working with you. I wonder if you would be nicknamed the Fairy, whether there is not a lot of business for you. I mean, what a nickname. I never imagined that you go, I also work at a security firm and have shares in it. I mean, it's the perfect match made in heaven. I love the fact that you did that.
Does anybody call you Tendai now, or is that only when you're naughty and you haven't necessarily done the washing up or put out the bins?
I think it's only my mom and my wife that call me Tendai. Even my own father calls me Beast, you know, so... Oh man, it's quite hilarious.
It works so on the number.
I should have it on my ID card.
Everybody loves me, calls me a dickhead.
It's not quite the same brand, that is it?
No, I can't get any business, I can't get any work. There's no company that wants to employ the dickhead, which is a bit of a shame.
I was actually going to go on to ask you, because I was going to ask you about the Beast Foundation. I dread to think what yours would be called, James, in that regard. But tell us a little bit about, because it's not just you and the Beast Foundation. I know Sia's doing some extraordinary stuff as well. We've spoken to Cheslin in the past, who's obviously got his own, you know, charitable actions going on. Tell me a little bit, not only about why you're doing it, but why that seems to be such a strong thread amongst, you know, South African greats. Why is it so important to you to put something back?
In South Africa, in Africa, you know, when you look at the challenges we have, you know, the unemployment rate, you know, you look at, you know, young kids that drop out of school, you know, to try and work and be breadwinners for their families, you know. And, you know, there's a lot of poverty. And the best way to combat that, you know, eradicate it, is starting to, you know, give back and help in a big way. Because, you know, I realize that, you know, I'm privileged, you know. Yes, I came from little, and I worked hard to get to where I am today. But along the way, I had a lot of people that invested in me, you know, people that believed in me, and they bought, you know, into my story. And they, you know, elevated me to get to, you know, to the big stage. And now that I've accomplished pretty much everything I wanted to, I decided to, you know, to pass the baton on to the next generation. So, you know, I believe our youth in Africa, you know, they're our future, and they're going to have a massive part to play, you know, in this continent reaching its fullest potential. So, yeah, man, that's why we started this foundation. That's why I see us doing what he's doing, because, you know, we want to, you know, we want to be change makers. We want to go out there and inspire kids and give them the means, you know, to climb their own ladders of success. So, you know, this is, you know, it means a lot to us, man, because, yeah, man, when you've walked the road, you know, the long road, you know, you understand that you need to help others as well.
It's hugely inspiring, and it's obviously inspiring with what you're doing, but actually just the number of South African greats, as we said, who put back in. What is it that you're raising money for? How are you raising the money? How can people help? And what action are you trying to drive?
So my foundation, the Beast Foundation, I created it to be a vehicle of opportunity for the youth. So my mission is to empower the youth across the platforms of sport, education, and life skills. So we, you know, we aim to build, you know, wholesome young leaders, you know, that will be great citizens and will be, you know, leaders in their communities. And, you know, they'll be able to provide for their families, their extended families. So, you know, we focus a lot on education. So education is super key, you know, because I believe, you know, most of the problems we face, you know, the social ills we have, the answer to that is education. You know, we look at gender-based violence, we look at unemployment, we look at all these things, you know, all the socioeconomic disparities. And education has got a massive part to play in that. So we focus on that. We give away academic scholarships. We have partnered up with a lot of great institutions. Henley Business School, you might be familiar with it. They're from the UK originally. So they gave us some scholarships to hand out. We're working with an inspired group of schools, which is Rhythm. You might be familiar with it. And they're also giving us scholarships. So we've got given away a lot of academic scholarships. And then on the sporting front, we're doing boot camps. We're focusing on rugby, we're focusing on basketball, we're focusing on netball, because we want to elevate the girl child. You know, we believe that girls are not really promoted, you know, and put on a pedestal like, you know, they deserve, because they work just as hard as boys or men. So we've got a massive focus on that in athletics, yeah. So, man, we fundraising because we need, you know, to make an impact. And for that to happen, we need the funds, you know. We need people partnering us, you know, and really contributing. So, yeah, I mean, that's it in a nutshell.
Wow.
Beast, I've got a question for you. Obviously, we've seen in the past with South Africa how important rugby is for healing kind of rifts and bringing a country together. And I think, you know, we saw it in 95 and then so poignantly in 2019. I'm interested from your perspective, because you've been in the team for such a long time, in 117 caps, did you always realise that you had such an important role? Because being a professional rugby player is hard enough. Trying to play for your country is hard enough. But also kind of having that pressure on you to also be kind of a shining light for so many people. You know, did that weigh down on you? Were you aware of how difficult a role that was?
No, I was well aware of it. You know, if it ever felt like a burden, you know, I always looked at the positive. I always, you know, looked at, you know, how privileged I was for me to be playing professional rugby, living my dream, you know, earning good money, being able to provide for my family. For me, those, you know, all those things were, you know, they were massive for me. You know, it was, I could, you know, look after my parents in Zimbabwe. I could look after my siblings. So, you know, I looked at it that this is, you know, it's a huge responsibility. So, you know, I'm sitting in such a great position. So, you know, the best way to show my gratitude is by going out there, you know, every single weekend and putting on my best performance so I can inspire that, you know, no matter what, where you come from, you can rise above your circumstances and you can become somebody great. You know, you can achieve great things. So, you know, for me, you know, it just felt like such a huge responsibility because, yeah, you know, sport plays a massive, you know, role in South Africa, and rugby is key to that because, you know, we have always been leading the way in terms of obviously winning World Cups. So a lot of people rely on rugby, you know, they look at rugby, you know, as a way to get inspiration, as a way to get hope. So it's something that we just took, our, you know, in our stride, you know, same as Sia, same as Chisnan, you know, same as Lucanio, you know, it's something that just comes naturally to our second nature that we, you know, we realize that this is such an honor. So
can I ask the question? Because actually one of the things, and you've referenced it a couple of times about the fact that you came from little, and one of the inspiring things about your story is that you are helping people walk a path that you yourself have trodden, so to speak. Do you mind me asking, would you be happy to share with us and with our listeners a little bit about your early years and how you found rugby or how rugby found you?
Yeah, no, I can definitely go down memory lane. So as you know, I was born and raised in Zimbabwe. Actually, at a young age, I was an avid soccer player, believe it or not.
What position were you?
I was a goalie.
You've got to be a goalie.
Because I was so big, you know. So my dad was a huge Manchester United supporter, so I just kind of, you know, followed suit and loved the game. So I played it, but I was clueless on a soccer field. So rugby got introduced into my primary school quite late, so when I was about 10, 11 years old. At that time, they were trying to recruit, get all the big boys playing. So obviously, my name was put on the sheet without even me volunteering to go play. So you know, I joined up, and at first, it felt quite awkward. I didn't really enjoy the game from the beginning, but eventually, I started understanding, you know, the basics. Then I went to a really great high school that was, you know, quite a good rugby school, and then it was there where I found my passion. And, you know, everybody around me just told me that I could become a professional, you know, at the age of 16, they're saying you can become a pro player if you, you know, if you really are serious and you work hard. So fortunately, South Africa was right close by because in Zimbabwe, there was no leagues, you know, there was no structures for me to obviously aspire to play, you know. I just literally wanted to go to South Africa, and we were invited on many occasions to play in the Craven Week, and we played against schools in South Africa. And it was there when I was scouted and invited to the Sharks Academy, and my life changed, you know, in that moment. You know, it was like my dream coming true, you know, and I really wanted to go to South Africa. So I moved across when I was 18 and I've been there ever since, you know, 17 years later, and I achieved everything I've, you know, my wildest dreams, man. So,
but yeah, how big a gamble?
I won't try and bore you and tell you.
Wait, not boring in the slightest. How big a gamble was that? I mean, because I think you possibly are underselling it by saying I moved across. I mean, am I right in saying you put everything on the line, and you literally packed a pair of boots and went for it?
Yeah, and I put everything on the line. You know, when I left home, I had nothing in my name. I just had a, you know, backpack with my rugby boots and a few items of clothing. And 2,000 rand, you know, my dad gave me 2,000 rand and said, hey, son, you go and realize your dream. So I jumped in a bus, and I was on a bus for like nearly 24 hours, got to Durban with so much excitement, and I was on my own. I didn't have family. I didn't have no support. So I used to do all these old jobs. I was a bouncer at one stage. I was playing junior rugby. I was playing under 19s. I did old jobs like bouncing, bartender, you know, just to get by and some cash, you know, put food on the table. And yeah, you know, it was humbling. It actually taught me a lot of great lessons, you know. So I just, yeah, I took all those lessons along my journey. And fortunately, you know, I played my first pro game when I was 21. So it didn't take too long for me to get to the top.
Quality came out, as you would expect. But that's a hell of it. I mean, did you do bouncing and barman? And did either of you have to...
Hask definitely got bounced a few times. Yeah,
I got filled in a lot by bouncing. what I always find so extraordinary about you know, someone like, you know, Tendai's story is that, you know, having on similar trajectories, he's 85, I was born in 85, you know, just a completely different thing. It's hard enough. Well, I always find it's hard enough being yourself and hard enough being a professional rugby player, let alone without all the other stuff going on. you know, that the things of like giving up your life, just going to a different place and going, I'm going to fight to do something I want to do, and having that determination. And it's really interesting because I think those early lessons, having done that, probably were your recipe for success to be such a fantastic player, you know, having to fight. Because some people would go give up after a bit of pressure or not want to do it. I think it's amazing. And it makes what I do, you know, obviously it's different strokes for different folks, but I think it's so eye-opening really to hear. And also then the responsibility. I know we touched on it earlier, just the responsibility to see that everything he does, other people are looking at it, go, do you know what, that's an opportunity. No one's looking at me going, oh, you know, in the same respect. I think it's utterly amazing to have that kind of journey. And I think you should be amazingly proud of yourself, because hey, for so many people who take the risk, they don't make it. And to be inspirational, like you are. I mean, I'm not sure I'm inspirational to anyone, but I you know, I think the Beast has certainly hit the nail on the head with what he's doing.
Yeah, but not only just trying to do well, trying to achieve, trying to get out from a complicated situation, trying to do the best possibility with the cards that are given to you, but also try to build in the future of the future game-changing leaders. That's what I think is so remarkable. It's easy, you know, to reach the top of the mountain, sit there, have your food, and never want to move. It's very different to say, right, I'm going to go back down and drag everybody back up with me to create some sort of movement, some sort of a legacy, a sustainable sort of positive dynamic for people around you. I think that's the true genius of it all, because like you said, I mean, depending on the circumstances, things can be easier or harder, whatever. But this is a true testament of commitment. 0 to 100 will get you somewhere. But when you go even further, poof, just proves the size of the heart.
I just wonder, because I know you said about if things ever got hard, you'd appreciate your situation, how lucky you were. But along that journey, you know, I know obviously everyone always kind of romanticizes how things were. But I imagine there were some times where you were sort of sitting on your own thinking, what the hell am I doing? How am I going to achieve this dream? And if there were, what did you think that got you through? What was it? Was it friends that helped you? Was it just your own mental strength? What was it that made you dig in? Because we all have bad days. And imagine your situation, having to fight for money, fight for recognition, fight to play a game. It must have been quite a lot of uphill struggles.
Yeah, no, James. You know, for me, yeah, there was a lot of battles. You know, but I think what got me through those battles was my mindset, you know. I had a do-or-die mentality. I realized that this was my opportunity, you know, to change my life, you know, to realize my dream, you know. And, yeah, so, you know, there were a lot of people that were relying on me to make it, you know, so that I could help them, I could assist them, my family, you know, extended family. So I knew that the responsibility was so huge, you know. So I just took it in my stride. So, you know, when other players, you know, for an instance, at the Sharks Academy, you know, used to look at like, you know, the 40-meter dash, they just go and, you know, do without actually taking it seriously. For me, this was like, hey, this is my moment that I can show the coaches that I'm here for business. So all my KPIs in the gym and everything, you know, I was ridiculous, man. I just used to be so pumped up, you know, to show that show my worth, you know, that I'm here to make it. So, you know, I was probably obsessed, you know, at a young age, you know, just to make it. So I used to train, you know, above and beyond just being, you know, with a team and do all this extra. So it made me so much fitter, you know, it got me so much stronger. So, you know, guys would freak out, you know, with stuff that I used to do on the field. But it was just because my mentality, I had a do or die, you know, approach, and also, yeah, man, and just persevering through it all. You know?
It's interesting saying that you saw kind of guys who had perhaps more privilege at not taking the opportunity, and you're looking across the change room going, well, they're just not taking it seriously. These guys think this is just a bit of a laugh, and this is your whole livelihood. I love that. And you going, right, well, if you're not going to work hard, I'll work as hard as you and triple it and double it. I think that's mega, isn't it?
Just picturing young Beast training in gym is already bringing the nightmares back.
Yeah,
I promise you. I think I'm going to be sore tomorrow after doing nothing.
No, man.
But Beast, there'll be a lot of like really keen rugby fans. We have obviously a lot of, we call them rugby nauseas. From those early days, is there anything kind of gym related you can share with us? Like, was there some point that you got your squat through the roof or your like bench press? If you could just throw a couple of numbers round for some of the keynotes, because I love
this. Nauseas. This is you. This is you for your notebook.
You want to know if you can bench more than Beast?
Come on,
bring it to the ten.
What was the big ten? Just give us your top three: squat, dead, and bench.
Write them down.
Write them down.
Yeah, the gym was my Yeah, it was my office. That's where I operated. So, you know, I own it. I'm not bragging, but, you know, I used to bench. My max bench was 195
kgs. Lovely. I like that.
And, yeah, and my max squat was 330.
Oh, no wonder you're folding people up in the scrum. 330. I reckon my little matchsticks would snap if I tried to do that. Might have loved that. At WASS in the gym, we had kind of scores on the walls. And if someone did a PB, we used to ring a bell and write it up. Did you have something in the Sharks like that? Where did people know that when the beast's in the gym and he's like breaking records, did people know about it? Or did you like just keep it under wraps?
No, and it would be on the wall. You know, at the Sharks, we had... conditioning coach, he always liked to put it up, you know, for everybody to see. You know, obviously some guys would not want their scores up there or their, you know what they did because they weren't part of it. So he made it a fact, you know, that you know exactly where everybody's, you know, stood. So I used to enjoy having a look at my stats and what I achieved. Yeah. So it was just something, you know, it was a part of my
I imagine it would have been like beast, bench, winner, squat, beast, bench, winner, fitness, beat,
long, Pat Lambie. Yeah,
yeah. The backs, you know, the backs would take over.
I want to ask you about the rugby because there's some wonderful, wonderful stories about your career. But one of the things that is symptomatic and sort of stands out is that you have overcome challenge after challenge to get to the point, particularly of a Rugby World Cup winner's medal. You've already mentioned the fact that you set off with a couple of thousand rand and a pair of boots, and that was the first big gamble. But actually getting the chance to play was also a sort of mountain that you had to overcome. And I just wonder, A, if you could expand on that for us, but B, whether there were points where it just became too political, too much of a sort of almost a societal challenge for you to be able to do what it was you so wanted to do.
Yeah, you know, it was really tough, you know. For a second there, I thought I wasn't going to play for the Springboks again because, you know, I'd made my debut in 2008. And then, you know, we had that golden year in 2009, you know, won the British Irish Lions series. We beat the All Blacks three times in a row, won the Tri Nations. And, you know, the following year, 2010, the Minister of Sport just decides to pull me back and not allow me, you know, to play for the Springboks. You know, it was really hard, you know. I think it was not a rugby decision. It was obviously political because I think, you know, he just didn't like rugby because at the time, rugby was kind of seen as a white man's sport. The transformation numbers were not great. So I happened to be one of the, you know, the only black guys in the team, probably maybe the only ethnic black guy starting consistently. So he picked on me, you know, for the fact that, hey, you know, I've got a Zimbabwean passport, but I had qualified under IRB laws. So everything was intact. So I couldn't understand it, you know. I couldn't understand it for a long time, you know. It was just, you know, my family was broken. You know, we had to stick together in a big way, you know. We prayed and we just, you know, had faith that something, you know, would happen. There would be, you know, intervention. You know, took like probably 4 weeks because I remember having a call with Regan Hoskins, the president of SA Rugby at the time. You know, he called me and said, hey, Tendai, I'm so sorry, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, you should be in the team, you know, and we don't even understand ourselves. But obviously, the minister has got the final say. So we cannot do something that is against government. So we just have to hope that somebody can help us in government. Yeah, we just need to work towards that. How long it would take, he wasn't so sure. He just said that we just have to keep on pushing. And I remember getting calls from, you know, my mentors telling me that they were upset, you know, because it was bullshit, you know, it was bullshit. Like, pack up and go play in France, you know, because this is what the hell, you know. I just had a season, you know, that made my career in 2009. You know, and I was doing great for the Springboks team. And I was, you know, a great model to young kids, you know, young black kids in South Africa. And this guy does something like that. So, you know, but I just kind of just took a step back and said, hey, you know what? I love the Springboks. I want to play for the Springboks. That's my dream. You know, I belong here. My family's here. And, you know, I'm going to, you know, somehow try and make this work and just pray that somebody intervenes and assists me. So after 4 weeks, you know, when I was down and out, you know, when literally I was trying to figure out my next steps, I got the best score of my entire career from the Archbishop Desmond Tutu.
The Lord moves in mysterious ways.
Exactly. Yeah, he called me. I could not believe it. I couldn't sleep. I think for a few nights afterwards, he told me, he's like, you know what? This is unprecedented. You know, you need to be back in the team. I'm actually one of your fans. I also scream beast when you carry the ball. It was quite funny, you know, the arch saying that. So, you know, he's just told me that, don't worry, that we're going to make sure that you get your passport in good time. So all I need for you to do is just have your phone on. I'm going to get somebody to call you. So, yeah, man, it was the best call of my life, like literally, I promise you. And it lasted probably 2 minutes. And then afterwards, he went on and called the Minister of Home Affairs. At the time, it was a lady called Nkosi Zana Dlamini Zuma. Man, she sped up the process. I missed the Tri Nations, but, you know, within 2 months, I got my passport, man. So it was, yeah, just an incredible testimony of just having faith, man, and just trusting. Yeah, you know, despite, you know, things looking, you know, dark and gloomy. So I'm so happy that, you know, I got my passport and I could play. And I played on the end of your tour.
I just want to dive in there and say, I'm so sad Tins isn't here this week because he's got friends in high places, he thinks. He ain't got Desmond Tutu on high speed dial. I mean, that tops almost everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the Lord on side.
Well, to be fair, I sort of had the Lord partly on side when I hang out with the Archbishop of Canterbury. Over here, but it's not quite the same level.
He's just asking you to repent.
He was. Yeah, he was like, "Stop being an idiot, James. You're upsetting the man upstairs." But Desmond Tutu, what? If anyone's going to sort your passport out, I have to go to the Home Office. Desmond Tutu is pulling strings for the Beast. Who knew?
That is amazing. I mean, that is an incredible story, and it's so deserved for you because of everything you have done and were doing at the time. It was only right that you ended up in that place. In terms of the rugby, do you miss it at all, or has that ship sailed, so to speak?
You know, for me, the ship has sailed. You know, I played so many games. I was privileged, you know, I was blessed. You know, I played 117 test matches. I played 160 Super Rugby matches, you know, and a couple of other, you know, Curry Cup games on top of that. So, you know, I just, you know, yeah, I was blessed. I did everything I wanted to, you know, achieved my wildest dreams. I never thought, you know, that I would play 100 test matches or over, you know, become the third most capped Boko full time. So I'm so content, you know. When I watch the guys playing now, you know, obviously, you know, I have a moment where I just go down memory lane and remember how special it was to win a test match, for example, when the guys beat the All Blacks now. But, you know, I'm so happy to be where I'm at, you know, to be a fan, to support, you know, Sia and the boys, I'm content. So there's no coming back for me. You know, I'm not going to do a Scott Bridge, that's for sure. I'm happy where I am.
Never say never.
Beast, I've got a question. Obviously, you have had a bit of an interesting kind of experience with different coaches within the Springbok setup. Some guys appointed on kind of merit, others kind of more political appointments. It's never kind of that clear sailing with the Springboks. I wondered whether Razi Erasmus and kind of the 2019 and that last kind of period where you guys weren't able to win a lot and then suddenly you just peaked at the right time. Was that your best experience in a Springbok shirt?
No, it certainly was. I think, you know, Razi came in, you know, and he changed the, you know, the mentality, the approach. And I think, you know, there was obviously a big elephant in the room, and I think transformation was something that was never addressed to the team. You know, as you know, we're a diverse country. The fact of the matter is that the team that takes onto the field has to be fully representative of the landscape of South Africa. It's a fact. So he said it straight up to the team that, guys, this is what we're working towards. You know, we want to achieve a team that is transformed. And, you know, for that to happen, you know, we need to have make sure that every player in every single position is the best they can be. But the team has to be diverse. And, you know, and now for the first time ever, it was something that was not whispered in the corridors, you know. It's something that we spoke about openly. And that just changed the whole narrative. You know, it wasn't a burden anymore. And the players embraced it. And, you know, obviously with Rusty's leadership, he set the tone. And I think the first thing he did was get everybody, you know, in the same room, you know, get the coaches from different franchises, get all the players, and just and explain that, you know, the reason why we play rugby in South Africa is to ultimately make the Springboks the best in the world. That is a fact. You know, he used the All Blacks as a blueprint. That look at what they do for, you know, for the All Blacks, they rest players when they need to be rested, and they ultimately work for the All Blacks to be the best they can be. So we use the All Blacks, you know, a lot. You know, we spoke about them. The players didn't really enjoy it that much because, you know, never want to be compared to your nemesis. But the fact of the matter is you have to respect that they were the best at the time and they were just, you know, they'd won back-to-back World Cups. So we used that a lot and, you know, drew a lot of inspiration. And it took time. And Rassie, you know, put up I'll never forget, you know, he put up a presentation on the big screen and said, hey, boys, you know, we've got 2 years to turn it around. You know, we've had two shitty years, but now we've got 2 years to turn it around. And there was 18 test matches. I think England was the first one. And, you know, he put a step-by-step process, 18 test matches to the final and said that, you know what, this is our ultimate goal, to turn it around. We need to win the World Cup in Japan. So along the way, we might lose some games, but we're never going to lose sight of what we want to ultimately achieve. So, you know, it just kind of like, you know, planted that seed of belief. You know, even when we lost to Argentina, you know, we still knew that, hey, we are on this journey. Then, and the, you know, the finish line is that World Cup. So, yeah, man, you know, Rassie was incredible, man. He's a genius. And, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed working with him.
I love those stories because I'm a huge believer that however complicated we want to make things, it's always going to be the human connections and the leadership is going to be the solution to all, right? And I mean, I was mind blown like everybody else. I didn't care who was going to win or not that 2019 World Cup, but I was mind blown by the documentary, about all the things that came after, about what happened inside. I think we were all moved and touched. And without getting too much in the emotion, there was also a fact that there was a lot of rotation in that squad. And I loved how, you know, between you and Steven Kitschdorf and Malcolm Max, who was the absolute superstar before, ended up on the bench and everybody was playing their part and I loved it. That was just a side note. I just want to bring you back to 2009. When you said that, obviously, when the things were really, really getting shitty, unfortunately, for political reasons, that you might have packed up your bags and gone to France. You know, that just slipped into my mind. If there was a team that you spoke to, you know, tell me who it was, please, because I want to know who they were. And if there wasn't anybody, would have been a trip to France that would have been on the map for you? Would that have been something close to your heart?
Yeah, and I think France was my destination of choice, man. I love France, you know. So,
my man.
yeah, I love it. So I didn't really engage with any teams, you know. So it was just something that I thought about, you know. But I would have probably wanted to go to Bordeaux. You know, I think Bordeaux is an amazing place. So I kind of, I just wanted to go to France and it almost happened. It literally almost happened. But yeah, man, yeah, I love France for a fact.
I love you, brother, just by saying that. I'll forgive you for the 10 centimeters that I lost in November 2013. It's okay. It's all in the past now.
Front row union alive and well.
Yeah, it's all in the past.
I've got to ask you just about Rassie and obviously, congratulations to the box this summer against the Lions. It wasn't the series that you played in 2009. I think that will forever stand as one of the greats. I'm not sure we got there this time around. What do you make of Rassie, though, and the 45-minute presentation, etc.? Was that a masterclass and something that you were like, you know, that's why he is the man he is? Or was there a little bit of you that was like, that should remain private?
Nah, that was a masterclass.
Easy for a book to say.
I think it was factual. I think it influenced the series in a big way because I must say, you know, I wasn't happy with the officiating in that first test match. And I think obviously what happened after that, I understand. I know the process, you know, because I always used to be involved in that process of actually getting feedback from a referee, like, you know, in terms of scrums, you know, if we get a few penalties, like, you know, go and ask, what did we do wrong? So I understand the process. And for that, you know, for him to take so long to give
Nick Berry, I think
Rassie,
it was.
Yeah, Nick Berry. That's got a, you know, it's got a big, you know, impact on selection. You know, when you don't give feedback in good time and say, this is why we penalized you, this is why, you know, he didn't obviously, you know, get that 50-50 call. It happens what you want to achieve, you know. So that's what was frustrating. So I understand, you know, from Rassie's point of view and Jacques Nienaber, that they wanted to select a team that obviously will play to those strengths and, you know, they won't give penalties at the wrong time. So, yeah, you know, it was just all those things that kind of like I really enjoyed. I think it was probably one of the videos I watched like back to back a few times. So I was part of him for taking that, because it's not easy to do that, because you kind of obviously standing up against, you know, a big organization like World Rugby. So, you know, it can have obviously, negative impact on you. But he took it up, you know, personally, called the officiating out. And in the end, it played a massive role, and the refs were paying more attention now. So I was happy, man. I was really happy he did it.
I'm not surprised in Rassi we trust in that part of the world. One of the things I did want to ask you about, though, off the back of that series, and it's interesting when you were talking about how the box are now far more representative and it's a far more inclusive team to be a part of. One of the things that was really noticeable, actually, not only was Sia and how well he played, but also the way that he carried him. Funny enough, where I'm actually thinking is him in the tunnel and the energy and the almost the dancing and the sort of celebration of his role as captain and the way that he leads that team out. And I just wondered, relative to when you came into the box in 2008, relative to what you see now in everything that the Springboks embody, I mean, are you in awe of the journey that that team has been on? Is it exactly what you thought it would be and should be? I'd love to know how you equate the box today with the Springbok side you came into.
I'm in awe of their journey. You know, I was privileged to be a part of the setup for so long, you know, 13 years, and actually witness change, you know. Because, you know, in the beginning, I won't lie, you know, I felt like the odd one out, you know. All the black players felt, you know, the odd ones out, because you were the minority in a big way. Yes, you know, there was transformation, you know, there was a quota system, and there were orders, you know, things that the Springboks had to meet, but it took a long time, you know, and the Springboks were probably not big in terms of, you know, the black community supporting them, you know. So the team transformed, you know, tremendously, you know, over a period of 12 years. And for me to witness, you know, Sia being captain was a big moment. You know, I was very fortunate to be there in that, you know, in that team room when Rassi made that announcement. It changed history. And I think that's what made the Springboks that won that World Cup in 2019 so iconic, you know. For the first time, you know, a lot of young kids could now relate to a Mapimpi, you know, relate to a Lukanyo M, you know, relate to Sia, you know, because they've walked in the same shoes. So, you know, we embrace diversity, we embrace inclusivity in a big way. The culture changed. You know, when you mention Sia dancing, it's stuff that never used to happen in the past, you know, because black guys were not comfortable, you know, or people of color were not comfortable to dance or, you know, speak in your language. So, yeah, that changed in a big way. So, yeah, man, yeah, for me, it was a combination, everything coming together. So I'm so happy that I left the box in the state they are. And they're a team for the people now. That's what they are.
Beast, I mean, I've never actually been lucky enough to play with you with any of the barbarian stuff or anything else. I wonder, with that change of culture, did it change you as a player from going to someone who played their heart out in the field to suddenly having a much more active, like, leadership role? Is that something that happened? You know, were you someone that always spoke, or were you someone that wasn't really asked to speak? And then suddenly, as, you know, the team become something that it should always have been, which is everyone should have be able to express themselves. Did you kind of grow into that leadership role by the end with Rassi? Were you somebody that was really kind of quite poignant, or is that something you didn't embrace? I'm interested to know what kind of guy you were behind the scenes.
Yeah, no, it's something that I embraced. I think, you know, when I started off, I was quite shy, you know, and I'm an introvert by nature, so I always never used to speak that much. And I always told myself, you know, obviously actions speak louder than words, you know. So that was my approach. So I never spoke a lot, you know. Yeah, you know, probably until I played like 50 test matches and I really felt comfortable in the environment, then I started contributing. So, you know, yeah, when I got to 80, 90 test matches, when Rassi came in, I was, you know, fairly confident and being really vocal about certain things around the team, you know, the culture and, you know, what we wanted to create, you know, the standards and, you know, the forwards, you know, specifically, you know. You know, I always used to make sure that, you know, I spoke my bit. If I felt like we didn't play as well as we can, I would say that, you know, if we didn't scrum as well as we did, I would be honest, you know, in a big way. And Rassi empowered the players, you know, to just take charge of all those different facets of the game. So the scrum was my forte. You know, I used to do presentations. I used to do analysis on opposition. So yeah, man, I just took it in my stride, man, and I just felt like it was such a huge responsibility. Because sometimes you get comfortable, you know, when a coach does it for you, you just think that, hey, you can just sit there and just get information fed to you. But when you do it yourself, you know, it actually changes you in a big way. So I took that responsibility. And also being the most capped player, you know, in the last 2 years of my career, you know, I knew that I had to evolve. You know, I had to be that guy that would show the youngsters the way. So, yeah, I would sit down with guys that made their debuts, the Swoon Corsis, the Pio Deantis, you know, sit down, have a one-on-one and just tell them that this is what will make you a great Springbok. So, yeah, man, yeah, it was a big, big part of my psyche.
I love that. But honestly, you're telling me, Beast, with 117 caps, you were talking to the young players. Come on, mate. You must have had them carrying your bag, getting your coffee.
Running the bath.
Yeah, you must have to be booking. There's no way you're talking to the young lads coming in.
He's a man of the people, James. You could learn a thing.
Mate, you needed 10 lads to probably unload the squatting rack. Sorry, 350 kgs to take you a week to get it off.
Tell me, Beast, when you look back now, I mean, the people in this part of the world will remember your extraordinary performance in the Lions in 2009. And unfortunately, we also have to remember your performance in the World Cup final in 2019 as well. But for you, which was the period of your career where you thought that I am doing exactly what I was put here to do? Which was the point that you look back most proudly on of your playing career?
I think it was the later stages of my career. I think, you know, those last 2 years, you know, with Rassie, I was mighty proud, you know, of my performances. I think I stepped up in a big way because, you know, I reached a point where, you know, that's when you've been in a system for so long where the media might, you know, be writing stories about me saying, you know, this guy has had his time. It's time for the next guy, you know. So they always used to play me and, you know, kids off against each other, you know, stuff like that. That I've kind of overstayed my welcome. So, that kind of forced me to work even harder. You know, I kind of reinvented myself, my training regime, you know, my diet, everything played a key role to that, you know, because I played some of my best rugby in the last 2 years. So I think that now look at that period, you know, that's what really defined me as a player. And that's what kind of obviously made my legacy great on the field. So, yeah, the last 2 years were massive.
And where is the World Cup winner's medal these days?
It's in my cabinet at home. It's locked up. It's safe.
Do you know, I know your time is tight, and we're so grateful to you for dropping in from California. I know you've got lunch with Jay-Z and golf with Michael Jordan and dinner with Elon Musk to come today. So it's very good of you to swing by and have a chat with us. I'd just love to know, as a sort of a final sort of question, really, and I'd love to know how proud you are of what you have done. And I hope that you sort of take the time to look back and not quite pat yourself on the back, but I hope there's a cigar in a bathtub somewhere at times where you're able to say to yourself, it's been a hell of a journey and I've got to where I wanted to get to. Is that a thing for you, or are you just always on to the next challenge and chapter?
Yeah, I think I have moments when I celebrate, you know, especially with my family. I think my wife plays a big part in that. You know, she always says, you know, you must enjoy, celebrate the, you know, the big wins. So I've had moments that I've kind of just pondered, you know, gone down memory lane and just been so, you know, thankful that I've achieved so much. But, the thing is, I've never let it, you know, dwell on me for long because I want to achieve so much more, you know. I'm very ambitious by nature. I think it's a Zimbabwean thing. It's in the blood, you know. You know, Zimbabweans, when, you know, they always, you know, do great things, you know. So I always want to achieve so much more than I did. You know, I had a great journey on the rugby field. But now that I'm in my next chapter of life, I even want to create a greater legacy than I left on the field. So that is my, you know, my next thing. So I'm motivated. I'm doing all these things, my foundation, my businesses. You know, I'm studying, sit on the board of the Sharks. So, you know, it's all these things I'm just trying to push. You know, I'm like, hey, you need to, you know, you really need to put yourself out there because I want to, I want to be a role model for young, you know, sports people that you don't have to just be content with what you did on the field. You can actually do greater things beyond that.
I think you're a role model for the three of us, actually. And that's a pretty good place to start. Thank you so much for dropping in. Your story is truly, truly inspiring. And obviously, you know, I know everyone will, but we wish you all the very best with the Beast Foundation and the CEO work and just generally conquering the West Coast of America as you go. Thank you for swinging by. Hopefully we'll get to do this in person sometime, but all the best to you, Beast. Really appreciate it. Take care.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thanks. Hey, thanks for having me.
And there he goes, conquering new frontiers. I mean, I listen to a story like that and I come back in here and I just wonder what the hell you're doing with yourself.
I think exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's no James Haskell Foundation. I mean, I do a lot of work for charity. Don't like to talk about it. I mean, a lot of the guests we have on don't stop going on about it. Oh, we're saving lives. All right, we're all saving lives, Chief. You know, I'm saving through humour. What an inspirational guy.
What a guy.
But do you know what I love? Right, is if you were to tell me that he was like doing, you know, an MBA, had set up this foundation, was, again, as articulate as you, I just wouldn't know, because you only ever see the player on the field.
Yeah.
And normally it was me like trying to hit him around the shins to stop him going over the top. We didn't obviously have a lot of chat, apart from just sort of, you know, shaking hands after the game. But what a good guy, living the dream, hanging out with Trevor Noah, Rock Nation. I mean, I think he's amazing. And I think he's doing some great things. And what I was trying to get from him was, you know, as a person in the public eye, right, you talk about being a role model, and a lot of that stuff's like bolted onto us. Like, you didn't ask to be a role model, but often you have that effect. But for those guys, it's so inherent in everything they do that they've got such a role to play. Like, if I mess up, people are like, well, you know, James Haskell, he's messed up. For these guys, that added pressure, the added pressure to perform, but also to know that people are watching, going, everything he does is an inspiration. And then to go exactly what Ben said, to flip it on his head and go, do you know what? Not only have I reached the top, I'm going to drag everyone up with me. I think it was mind-blowing, and a good lad, and doing it with good fun.
I wasn't a guest. I was just one of those other fans just listening to this. I could listen to this for hours. It's what exactly made me fall in love with rugby, I think, was a bunch of guys who want to go through an adventure of not just what happens on the field, but who you are as a person. How do you take people with you? How do you impact positively around you? Some such an interesting character. Credit to you boys for actually asking those questions. And when you say that, you know, you never get to hear that story. Well, it's also because you're trying to dig a little bit further than just his statistics of 350 kgs. Fucking hell.
I actually bench more than him, but don't worry about it. I don't want to say anything because it broke the illusion, but don't worry about it, Chief. You can't, and I squat 300, so actually we're not that far off. So maybe I should be called the Beast, or I'll take the Dominator if that's up for branding.
No, that just fascinates me. It's just to see the real depth of it. And to be honest, there's no, pas de fumée sans feu. Yeah, there's no smoke without fire.
Yeah.
You don't have 117 caps without being an excellent guy with some proper drive in, you know, with something extra special, extraordinary about him.
But also, imagine in all rugby circles around the world, there's obviously different categories of people who play, different kind of demographics. I love the bit where he said, you know, he's packed his bag from Zimbabwe, arrived in South Africa, and is working on a door, and then going into the Sharks changing room and seeing a James Haskell type character, you know, not giving it 100%, you know, not taking it seriously. And for him going, you know, you're wasting your time. You're not seeing this as opportunity. And how many people do we know, and how many people would we played with who had an incredible talent but didn't have the dedication or focus? You know, and that was the only thing I pat myself about. I had limited talent, but I had a work ethic to strive to do it. To hear him, you know, have that and to surpass it and to go to that level. And also, with all the political landscape, I think it's really inspirational. I'm fascinated to see what these guys do, and can they, just as, you know, we've had other guests on, we've talked about the importance of making rugby exciting. We also have that, those other people making political change.
Yeah.
You know, you talk, when one of our production companies made a podcast called Defiance with Michael Johnson, talking about sports people making a stand and changing the rhetoric around and how powerful sport can be. Because a lot of people talk about politics in sport, and most people go, shut up, mate. You know, don't talk about politics, stick to what you know. And actually think guys like him need to keep doing that.
Unbelievable. Hugely inspiring. Do you know the game that falls out of talking to Beast and David Pocock is what a team Zimbabwe could have had in another era.
Wow.
Brian Mujati, Tukuta Ngwenya, who burnt Habana, Adrian Garvey, he actually played for Zim, I think, at the 91 World Cup. Gary Teichman, what a player. Dave Ewers, Seb Negri, playing for Italy at the moment. Scott Gray, Northampton. Don Armand. Should I keep going?
No, but you get the picture.
You get the picture.
Someone in
the Facebook group, pick the greatest Zimbabwean 15 that never was. That's one of the great shames of the fallout. You've got to go into a business call. So we're going to be very quick on our GBNR Spiz this week, which runs you through all the pressing GBNR business that you need to know. And last week I learned that GBNR Spiz stands for shit biz, which is exactly what I had in mind when we built this empire. GBNR prize draw time, and it is, you've got a drum roll in you? The finale. We have got two draws to announce on this week's show. The runner-up and the grand prize winner, which would figure, wouldn't it? The runner-up, a reminder, gets a backstage access to a pod recording and a grand in cash. And we are going to give the winner a call right now. 321, dial the number, fingers crossed. Sam Goodrick-Clark, we are coming for you.
Hello?
Hello, is that Sam?
Hello? No, who's speaking?
This is Alex Payne from The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. We are one of the most shambolic podcasts known to man, and we're trying to get hold of Sam Goodrick-Clark.
Why?
Well, is this Sam? Please don't tell me you're doing what our winner last week did, which is pretend you're not Sam when you are Sam.
Sorry, you're from the podcast The Good, The Bad and The Rugby.
Yes, and we basically won a prize.
Are you Sam is the first question. It's not a difficult question. Is your name Sam?
Yes.
Oh, this is Sam.
Yeah, my husband's just handed me the phone.
Oh, I'm so sorry. We were getting very stuck. Sam, good afternoon to you. It is Alex Payne from The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you.
Do you know why we might be calling you?
Well, I entered a competition.
You did.
But to win some tickets.
And we've got bad news for you, but we've got good news for you. The bad news is you haven't won the prize that is the Maldives. But the good news is you have won the backstage passes and £1,000 in cash. That has to be a good start
really?
To a Monday. Yeah, you have. I promise you. Absolutely, 100%. You have just won
£1,000 in
cash. £1,000 in cash.
But as your husband was quite aggressive, as if
we might cut it down to 500.
We might give you 200 quid and tell him to, you know, chill out.
We're being 100%.
It's because I was making these challenges and I said, my phone's ringing, can you just answer that? And of course, it had no caller ID, so he
it didn't.
Assumed it was someone who was trying to sell me some life insurance or something.
He didn't sound hugely impressed. I'm taking it you're the listener in the family, he's not. I don't think he's got a clue who we are and where we're coming from. Would that be about right?
No, we are both the listeners in the family. What? Our son is one of the Premiership players and I follow all the podcasts, and he was telling me to listen to your podcast. My husband doesn't listen to podcasts. He hasn't quite discovered them yet. But he's very much into rugby and podcasts.
I'm slightly worried your husband might be trolling us. Yeah. He might be one of the ones in the YouTube comments, given the way he picked up the phone.
You said your son plays in the Premiership?
Yeah. Son plays for London Irish.
Oh,
good on
what
him.
What position does he play?
Prop. Number one.
Oh,
good
lovely.
Boy. Well done him. Well, listen, if you could apologise to your husband, if you could celebrate with however you want to do that, your grand in cash, and come and see us on a show. We'll get our people to call your people and we'll find a date that suits. We'd love to say
hello. Thank you very much.
Please don't bring your husband, though. Bring someone who's a little more friendly, because I think we'd all fear for our lives.
I'll bring him. Honestly, he can be really friendly.
Can he?
Tell you what, bring someone else's husband. It's much more fun. Just don't tell him. Get your new boots on, get your new heart rate monitor, and tell him to stay at home for a meal for one.
Yes, exactly.
All right, I will do.
Good on you, Sam. Thank well you. Done, and thank you for entering. We'll see you soon.
Thanks a lot. Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
She just about saved that.
Yeah, she did. She was very friendly. And
who is this and what do you want? You're from a podcast.
Who? What? What do you want? Alec Payne. No, it's Alex Payne.
Aled. Thank you very much indeed to Will Goodrick-Clark for sending his mum to our competition.
Well done, Will.
Not for sending his dad.
No, but it's good aggression,
reception
isn't it?
Duties. Yes, very true.
He needs that aggression as a prop. So, you know, maybe it's a good thing. Good combination of genes. Good front of house and back of house. I quite like that.
Good on him. Sam, we'll see you at a show soon. Shall we do? Have you got a bigger drum roll in your artillery?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Okay, all right. Well, let's just dial up our big prize winner. No, that's not going to make the cut. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Thank you very much indeed to everybody who has entered our Good, Bad and Rugby prize draw. This is the grand finale. It is time to call our GBNR prize draw winner, which is no less than 7 nights all-inclusive at the exclusive Furaveri Resort in the Maldives and $3,000 in cash. I'm actually quite proud that three idiots in a shed have pulled together a prize with a quality of that.
Because you would think that it would be a weekend away to Sidmouth with 200 quid
worth. A barging holiday in Scunthorpe.
Yeah, with 200 luncheon vouchers for or a Greggs.
The website for A Very Resorts, it looks mega. I'm actually sort of quite irritated we're giving it away.
I know.
There sort of ought to be a show there instead of...
We're not getting anything out of this, by the way. Like we're just sharing the love and not getting any sort of holiday resorts, which is a shame.
Money being raised for Cure Parkinson and Restart Rugby. So thank you once again to everyone who has entered. Let's give the winner a call right now. Please be pleasant and polite when we call you. 3, 2, 1, off we go. Please answer.
Oh. You're ruining the whole thing if you don't answer. Ultimate anticlimax.
This is the Vodafone voice.
Should we leave a message?
Yeah.
Please leave a message after the tone.
Barry, you have buggered the whole thing up. I don't know where you are. I don't know why you're not answering. We've given away bags of silage. We've given away marbles. We've given away rusty penknives. And everyone has picked up for the prizes that we've given them. It is Alex Payne from The Good, The Bad and The Rugby. And we're trying to give you a holiday to the Maldives. $3,000 in cash. And frankly, a non-appearance is embarrassing.
I said a redraw, Barry, but Alex was much more generous than I am.
Apparently, we've got to stick with Barry. If you get this, Barry, well done. You've won yourself a lovely holiday to the Maldives. We hope you have a fabulous time. Thank you for basically summing up our show, which is that
disorganized
never quite goes the way that we're looking for it to. But
you were
going to
get $3,000 of cash, but we're not going to give that to you now. We're going to take it ourselves.
Send us a postcard. Thanks a lot. Bye. And there goes Barry, and with it, the grand finale.
I quite like that. Barry, you've bugged it up.
Well done, Barry Hawker. You are going to the Maldives, you've got $3,000 in cash, and you haven't even had to come on and receive the dog's abuse on our show. That sort of sums up The Good, The Bad, and The Rugby in many ways, which is like a damp squib.
Yes. Yeah.
We do need to say thank you to our friends who have supplied this incredible prize. Be Away in Luxury and Furaveri Island Resort and Spa. One other bit of spiz this week, and it's well done to the RFU president, Jeff Blackett, and his wife, Sally, who have gone on a 150-mile nationwide fundraising walk for the IPF, the Injured Players Foundation. Apparently, he's scooted across Hampshire, Sussex and Kent, moving towards the Midlands and up to the north this week, and then back down to the southwest next week before finishing at Twickenham on the eve of the Autumn Nations series. He is raising money. If you'd like to pop a pound in the pot for the IPF, please feel free to have a little look on the RFU website. Well done to Jeff and Sally on that. And that is the end of Spiz. We have been The Good, The Bad and The Rugby this week. Thank you for joining us, Ben. We come again. I feel more ethereal and
I feel
wise.
Brighter.
Yeah, exactly. The Good, The Bad, The Badder, The Brains and The Rugby.
Too far, too much.
The Good, the bad, the badder, and the brains in the rugby.
Well, not two hands.
All right. Yeah. What did I say, hand at?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not a brains, am I?
No,
I
barely you are speak. Not.
One teacher said I would never read or write, so I'm on my fifth book and I'm presenting one of the world class podcasts in your face.
You don't need to write for the podcast.
I write books though, so don't worry about it. How many books you got published?
None.
Yeah, but I've double recorded number one artist, classical and pop charts.
Shut.
Yeah. Actually, well, no, Curzon's mess didn't make the top one.
Oh, right.
Thank you for tuning in. Hopefully there's some little pearls that fall out of that for you. It's always great to catch up with people who are making not only immense impacts on the field, but off it as well. And congratulations to Tendai. Sort of feel like his mother or his wife in that regard. Yeah. Respect all around. What a man and what a story. Our show is pulled together by the producer queen, Shara Kilgallen, and the world-class fixer that is Matt Chuck Norris. The Good, the Bad and the Rugby is a Folding Pocket production, if they do their job correctly. We'll be back next week. Love and hugs in the meantime. Bye-bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to The Good, the Bad and the Rugby. It can't have been easy. We'll be right back.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.